United States versus Smith. Ms. Garthwaite.
May it please the court. My name is Leslie Garthwaite. I represent the appellant Glenn Smith in this matter. Mr. Smith's conviction for possession of a firearm should be overturned, and his sentence for distribution of cocaine should be vacated. There are two issues on appeal. First, Mr. Smith's possession conviction should be overturned because the government failed to prove beyond a reasonable doubt that he constructively possessed it. The second issue is that Mr. Smith's sentence for distribution of cocaine base should be vacated because it violates the Eighth Amendment's prohibition on cruel and unusual punishment.
Is there any case law that supports your cruel and unusual punishment argument?
No, Your Honor. There is no case law saying that this issue particularly has been found to violate the Eighth Amendment, but that's likely because the Fair Sentencing Act is the latest statement on the propriety of particular sentences for cocaine-based offenses as of today, and that was only enacted recently, and this issue has not had a lot of opportunity to be considered.
And what evidence is there that the Fair Sentencing Act should apply retroactively?
Well, Your Honor, as you are likely aware, this court held earlier in United States versus Bell that the Fair Sentencing Act is not retroactive. But as discussed in the briefs, there is some evidence to suggest that using statutory construction principles of the Fair Sentencing Act itself, in addition to the fact that the authority that Bell and other cases have relied upon were habeas cases or themselves involved only statute-specific savings clauses, that there might be some distinction available for the Fair Sentencing Act to be applied to anyone on direct appeal. In addition, there is a line of precedent from this circuit and the Supreme Court suggesting that new rules of law that are enacted should be applied to cases on direct appeal.
Can you tell me this? I was wondering, was any further connection ever established between the woman who gave the informant the gun and the gun itself, or do we only know that she was Smith's girlfriend?
No, Your Honor, there was no evidence offered whatsoever. In fact, the government failed to prove that she was Mr. Smith's girlfriend. They suggested that she was and continually referred to her as Mr. Smith's girlfriend throughout.
Well, didn't he kind of do that?
He did say my girl in the transcript.
Yeah, that sounds pretty intimate.
It might have been, Your Honor, certainly, but it's just as possible also that he was referring to a friend, more colloquially, and just refer to her as my girl. And I think Your Honor highlights an important point that the government simply failed to offer any evidence connecting Mr. Smith to the gun at issue here or to the apartment where the gun was stored and then later delivered to the confidential informant. There was no evidence suggesting he had ever visited the apartment. No one had ever observed him there. His fingerprints were not found on the gun. It was only the government's audio recording between Mr. Smith and the confidential informant, and then the confidential informant and the woman, which constituted their evidence to support.
Why isn't that plenty?
Well, because this court's precedent suggests that more is necessary.
Well, why? There isn't any doubt, is there?
There is certainly a plausible alternative for the circumstances that Mr. Smith was unavailable to provide a gun, and so instead he put the confidential informant in touch with a woman who would have a gun to provide. And instead of being in charge or in possession of that gun, instead he was actually merely acting as a broker or someone who could put that in touch.
But it was his gun.
I'm sorry, Your Honor?
It was his gun.
There's no evidence to support that it was his gun.
She has her own shotgun? Is that your view?
Certainly, it's possible, but the government didn't offer any evidence to suggest that it actually was Mr. Smith's firearm. And I think it's beyond the precedent to say that the jury can speculate its way be out of reasonable doubt to support the finding of constructive possession. And there was simply more necessary here to make any kind of connection between the firearm and Mr. Smith. By failing to show one of the required elements of the offense, they failed to prove their case beyond a reasonable doubt. I see I'm into my rebuttal time.
Okay, thank you. Thank you, Ms. Garthwaite. Mr. McFadden?
Good morning, Your Honors. May it please the Court, Christopher McFadden on behalf of the United States. Your Honor, there are two issues raised in this case. The first is whether the sentence should be affirmed, and the second is whether the conviction on the gun count should be affirmed. And we believe that both of them should. As to the first issue, this Court has repeatedly said that mandatory minimum sentences in crack cases do not violate the Eighth or the Fifth Amendment, and I don't believe there's any occasion to reconsider that holding here.
At the time the informant picked up the gun from Smith's girlfriend, he had already been arrested, right?
The informant had a criminal history going back, Your Honor, yes.
No, he'd already been arrested.
I don't know if that's true, Your Honor.
I think so. Does he still exercise control over the gun at that point?
At what point, Your Honor? I'm sorry.
The point that he was arrested.
The informant was not arrested as part of this case, Your Honor.
I thought at the time he picked up the gun from Smith's girlfriend.
Do you want me to jump in, Your Honor?
Yeah.
Okay. There was a deal set up where the defendant was supposed to sell a gun and some crack cocaine to the informant. There was the sale and the handoff of the crack cocaine,
yeah.
And then the defendant said, you're going to have to go to this apartment to get the gun from my girl.
Right.
The defendant took off, and he was stopped by the Chicago police several blocks away. The informant went back to the ATF, and the informant was transported by agents as part of the undercover operation to the apartment.
Like as if he's been arrested.
No, nobody saw the defendant get in the car. There was no ruse that he was being arrested. Your Honor, he was just being transported there because he was old and he walked with a cane, and it was the quickest way to get him there.
See, by the time we get to the ninth case, I can't
remember. It's confusing, and it was in the record.
Yeah.
The informant passed away before the trial
case,
and that probably would have cleared up some of the gaps in the evidence to the extent there are some. But we believe, as we set forth in our brief, that there is sufficient evidence on the gun count.
How long after he was sentenced did the Fair Sentencing Act pass? Do you know?
The act went into effect on August 3rd of this year, Your Honor. I think it was signed by the President on that day.
Uh-huh.
The informant passed away before the trial, and the trial was last summer. It was in the summer of 2009.
Okay.
Is there any other questions?
Mr. McFadden, could you comment on the defendant's reply to your argument that Section 109 of Title I applies?
Yes, Your Honor.
Basically, as I understand it, they say that this is the Fair Sentencing Act is a remedial statute, and it doesn't apply to remedial statutes.
That's correct, Your Honor. I believe the Savings Clause, which is Title I of the United States Code, Section 109, it's been on the books since 1871. I believe it says that if there's a change to the penalty provisions of a statute, that those remedial provisions do not affect pending prosecutions unless there's an express statement in the Act that it should affect those pending prosecutions. And there was no such statement in the FSA of 2010. This Court has said that in Bell, and the Sixth and the Eleventh Circuits have also come to the same conclusions. So for those reasons, we do believe that the sentence should be affirmed in this case. Is there any further questions?
Thank you, Mr. McFadden. So, Ms. Garthwaite, do you have anything further?
Just briefly, Your Honor, I'd just like to point out Mr. Smith's sentence was imposed on March 5th of 2010, and the Fair Sentencing Act was passed into law on August 3rd, 2010, and it became effective immediately. To summarize, we'd just like to request that this Court overturn Mr. Smith's possession conviction and vacate his drug sentence. Thank you very much.
Okay, thank you very much. And you were appointed, were you not, Ms. Garthwaite? So we thank you for your efforts on behalf of your client, and we thank Mr. McFadden as well. And court will be in recess.